still remembers fire. Grass remembers rain. Every scar tells a story carved out of pain. If you go digging, son, best mind what you find. The truth cuts.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It has been a week, y'all. It is a balmy. I'm not sure that thermometer's right. Feels a lot colder than 60 in this garage. We've got a little cold front here in Houston. I wasn't here for it. I just got back. It's about 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. And I literally just got back into town maybe 30 minutes ago. I left Fredericksburg about 5:30 in the a.m. this morning. Get back here so I could record. And mostly just to get back home, because sometimes you just want to be home. You know? The road is not as alluring as it once was. I just loved my time on the road. Loved it. Stories, the adventures, meeting new people. And I still love going out and meeting folks. And the part where I'm on stage, that's the part that's the crux. That's the thing you're always trying to get to when you do travel work and travel shows. Boy, I don't got that camera lined up very good today, but we're already started, so we're just going to roll with it. The road is not as alluring as it once was. As a young man, I liked to be on the road. I've spent a great deal of my life living like some kind of nomad, living out of a bag. Not that I didn't have a dresser, I just never occurred to me that maybe I should unpack my shit and put it in a dresser. It's easier to keep that bag ready to go. And then me and Rachel, we got married and we had kids, and I didn't travel for a while, and I got used to being a homebody, which I think might be my natural state. Maybe a lot of folks. And, about 6 years ago, I started performing and traveling again. And some of these weeks where it's all run together, it's hard for me to get out of that bag. It's hard for me to get out of that bag, put my clothes back in the dresser, and put my shoes where they go, and take everything out of my camera bag and put that back up. My office is a mess right now. Just that straight grinding period, finishing up the book and it just doesn't draw me like it used to, Keep wishing somebody invent one of them Scotty beam-me-up machines or something. I'd probably be scared to try it, to be honest with you. That seems like you could come out to that. They never showed us the bloopers while they were trying to figure the beam-me-up Scotty machine. There might have been a whole lot of times people showed up with a wing-wing on their forehead or something because that thing mixed up their molecules and what have you. Seems like a lot could go wrong. I don't really know the science behind it. I'm not really a Trekkie. I shouldn't have probably started talking about it, because I don't know shit about Star Trek. Other than it was me and my father used to watch it together when I was younger. My dad was a Star Trek. My dad liked Star Trek. My dad, when I was younger, was a big fan of old Gene Roddenberry. And I liked the show. I liked old Scotty. I'm always a little, I like a Scottish accent. I like to hear a Scotsman talk. It's one of my favorite the dialect, maybe accent, dialect. I like the there's a rhythm to it when Scottish people talk. And though I don't know all the words, I can always understand what they're saying, you know, just context. And there's a lot of, a lot of Appalachian people, myself included. I'm not Appalachian. I'm from Appalachian people, but I'm not Appalachian. I'm Texan. But a lot of Appalachian people descend from Scots and Irish and Welsh. A lot of places where the language has a little music to it, a little cadence. I think about when you hear old school preachers. There's a preacher out of South Louisiana I like to listen to every once in a while. Not that I necessarily agree with his message, but the man's a consummate performer. I love to watch him speak because his timing is impeccable, his measure of breath impeccable, his cadence impeccable. He's a preacher named Jesse Duplantis out of South Louisiana, and he's one of the last of the old school. Still a little fire and brimstone. I did hear him do a really funny sermon one time where he was talking about abatement. And it just triggered me the way he worked it in there, because he was talking about, he said, you got to abate yourself to your situation. And if your situation, you ain't got no money, you got to abate yourself to that. You know, I've been very fortunate. I'm very blessed. I got a new Harley Davidson. And a house with 36 chandeliers in it. I've had to abate myself. That tickled the shit out of me. I was like, boy, you silver tongue devil. God bless you. There's a magic in the way them old dudes talk, you know. I try to capture some of that in some of my spoken word and my stand up and when I speak on here. I miss that. I miss the language having a purpose, not just a function purpose, but a joyful purpose, really. I was listening to Billy Bob Thornton talk in an interview, and he said that he was getting tired of movies that played music to tell you how to feel at every scene. And it really struck me in some kind of way, because that's what language used to do. It's what language was for. Language and the language you get from the Scots and the Irish and the Welsh, even the blue collar places in England, Liverpool, the language it functions, but it also tells you how to feel. It's a beautiful thing. A lot of my artist friends are really freaked out about AI right now. A lot of raging online about AI, AI music. It's not scary to me. Like, well, AI's gonna start writing comedy. Well, let it, you know. The difference between me and AI is I know I can walk up to a group of 8 people and I can make them laugh. I can entertain them. I can hold their attention. You know, that's the big, as we move more towards algorithm-driven entertainment. You know, the format keeps getting shorter. It's actually not even true. It's actually getting longer again. Most of the Reels content, and used to be I couldn't even post a Reel that was longer than 60 seconds. For a while, it was like 30 seconds. And now I can run 5-minute Reels on Facebook. I can run up to 3-minute Reels on YouTube. Reels, Shorts, where they all got their own stupid name for them, but it's the same thing, short-form content. TikTok, I can do up to 10 minutes. I don't do it very often. They don't play very well, and I don't honestly put a lot of effort into TikTok these days. Ever since the ban and they kind of put it back together, and the algorithm has been a little different over there, and it's not as, it used to be all the platforms were a little different. You have one kind of algorithm going on Instagram that appealed more to I would say like 25 to 35 year old audience. And then the algorithm on YouTube was decidedly older. YouTube to me are like the pioneers of video entertainment on the internet, right? Like the people who are on YouTube and maintain accounts on YouTube and spend a lot of their time on YouTube are the people that were at the first wave of experiencing video content on the internet. And so they're kind of like guys that like, you know, them high dollar bourbons. They have their own taste. They're a little harder to win over. So it's a different interaction for them. Facebook, I would say like 45 to all the way up to 75 year old people. It's one of the easiest formats to use. You can use posting and stuff. You can have a lot of engagement on there and discussions back and forth. So they used to all kind of offer something different. And TikTok was like, TikTok had this weird, these weird pockets where TikTok was, a lot of it was people under 25. And then there was like a really niche section over here that was a whole bunch of Gen X people that was on the TikTok. And a lot of the Gen X folks left after the ban, and some of them have come back and tried to keep their accounts going. But I haven't put a lot of effort in TikTok post-ban. It's a lot to keep up with all four of the things. And there's so much AI content on there. And I don't personally care for a lot of the AI content. Not because I have any kind of moral drag out against it. Nothing like that. I don't care about that kind of stuff. Just a lot of it's just not good. It's just not good. It's not entertaining to me. It usually doesn't make sense. You see a lot of Facebook pages that are run by AI. You can go out there and look, and there's just creators that everything they do is just flush out of ChatGPT, and it's an easily recognizable style. And you just look at it, I just lose interest because I don't think you're telling me your point of view. I think you're just spouting nonsense and diatribe at me. But I'm not mad at it. I'm not, like, a lot of my artist friends are really. My buddy Jeff Canada has been on a rampage about the damn AI. He's so mad about the AI. And, you know, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying I do not find it that scary. I listen to podcasts. I listen to people talk about the future of where we're headed, the future of the platforms. I keep an ear to the ground on this stuff because I have to. It's part of my job. But I'm not as concerned about it as a lot of people are. Maybe I'll turn out to be wrong and I'm okay with that. But I think AI is going to generate content and music and art. The thing is, music's been codified forever. Nashville's been pumping out the same garbage for 35, 40 years nearly. Okay? Hip-hop was the first ones it happened to. They got taken over, codified real quick. Pop music's been codified for a long time. You got 8 people writing pop songs, you know. I think AI will generate content and generate music and art for the same people that already like codified bullshit. I'm not worried about my fans leaving me to go listen to an AI comic. I'm not worried about my fans leaving me to go watch an AI podcast. I'm not worried about it. And if they do, God bless them. I hope they enjoy it. But it's not. It's just that the codified crap has been a part of entertainment for a long, long, long time. Long time. It's been codified crap. And the people that love codified crap are going to love that AI stuff. And God bless them. Not everybody needs to be complex. Not everybody needs to have complex interests. Not everybody needs to have complex desires. It's okay. I don't fault anybody for that. Every once in a while, I like to just put on a dumb action movie and just enjoy just a dumb action movie with not a lot of going on, you know, and just live in that moment. Old 80s movie, Tango. Give me Tango and Cash. It's not great writing, you know what I mean? It's not a particularly interesting plot. But by God, every once in a while, I just want to lay on the couch, watch me some Tango and Cash. I don't need something complex. I don't need something to make me think. Yeah. And the people that do need that, the people that do have, will still flock to original creatives. Will still flock to writers who they find original. Will still flock to speakers that they find original. Will still flock to musicians that they find original. AI ain't going to write you John Moreland. It just ain't going to happen. Okay, now people churning out, it is going to put some musicians out of business. It is going to put some comics out of business. It's going to put a hell of a bunch of screenwriters out of business. But the people it's going to put out of business are the people that are just kind of being part of the machine anyways right now. I don't think AI is going to put John Moreland off his guitar stool. I don't worry about that. I guess the way they do. Maybe I should, but I don't. I think the people that really appreciate interesting, complex art will still be drawn to that. I think the people that enjoy what I do will still be drawn to that as long as I keep doing it honestly and truthfully. You know, that's the shit you can't really teach nobody. I mean, it's true with comedy. It's true with carpentry. Okay? There's millions of guys out there that can build you a pretty good table. Good-looking table. Here's a perfect example. There's a million woodworkers out there that can make you the most beautiful resin table you ever seen in your life. Just like every other resin table you've seen, maybe with a few different details. But for every million of those guys, there's one guy still doing Mortise tenon and beautiful old school shaker style work. You know what I mean? For every million of those guys, there's one guy or girl who's doing amazing work still, carpentry. It's anything. If you do anything honestly, then nobody can fault you at the end of the day. Nobody can fault you. I believed in me. I gambled on me. I do my thing honestly. Sounds great. Yeah, every episode we do here in the Wrecking Yard isn't a banger. Every episode doesn't have a great message. Every episode, it doesn't have the best stories. Some weeks I'm tired, and y'all can tell I'm tired today. But it doesn't have to be. It just has to be honest. I had a long conversation with a friend last week who told me point blank in no uncertain terms I hadn't been a very good friend this year. That there had been times he needed me as a friend and I didn't show up for him. And he was 100% right. 100% right. I didn't support his projects. I didn't show up for him. Not out of malice towards him, just being caught up in my own bullshit. It's been a stressful, busy year. And that's still no excuse. He was 100% right. I had to own it in the moment. I had to just be quiet and hear him out. Listen to what he had to say. Because he was right. I have not been a very good friend to a lot of my friends this year. I have been too wrapped up in my own shit. And I couldn't do nothing. I could, you know, I told him I'm sorry. He's like, well, I wasn't looking for an apology. And he wasn't. He just was being honest with me the way a friend should. I'll tell you this. He wouldn't have been honest with me about it if he wasn't interested in still being my friend. That's why he was honest with me about it. And he had every right to be. Of course he did. And I'm glad he was. Gives me an opportunity to repair it in the future. Gives me an opportunity to be a better friend. And that's all I can do is work at being a better friend. And I didn't offer him a bunch of excuses. He said a couple times, I know everybody's got their own shit. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. But you've been going through some big shit. And I wasn't there. And so I'd been promising to go by and visit him for months on end. And then shit would just happen. And it doesn't matter. I'm making excuses right there. I didn't do it. I didn't follow through. And I got to do a little better. Sorry, my eyes leaking. It's driving me crazy. A little bleary-eyed. Hope you guys, those of you here in the States, I thought about this. I wanted to talk about this week and about Thanksgiving. And I made a post that went viral this week talking about my Thanksgiving mishaps. I'm going to talk to y'all a little more in depth about it. And it just struck me, being an American, sometimes the perspective is blinding. And sometimes I forget that, you know, just because we're having a holiday doesn't mean anybody else is, you know. Like, there's plenty of people here in the States that don't celebrate Thanksgiving. But it was funny, like, people in Australia are like, yeah, we don't really have a thing for that. And I was like, yeah, I guess not. And it caused me to go do some digging about Thanksgiving to, you know, kind of find out like where it all stemmed from. I mean, if you're in the United States, you've heard the stories about the Pilgrims meeting the Indians and the Native Americans and having the first Thanksgiving, which is a bit of a load of hooey for the most part. But, you know, that's how history's written. It's just whoever could cobble together the most interesting horse shit, that's what we're stuck with. But I learned a lot in reading about it that really shocked me. I was trying to figure out, but it's a big deal here in the United States. And I've been in Canada one year during Canadian Thanksgiving. So Canadian Thanksgiving sometime in October. I think towards the beginning of October. I felt like I was in Canada October 6th through 10th, and I was there. Last night I was there was maybe Thanksgiving. I don't know if they do it on the same day every year. Some Canadian fans might have to jump in the comments and steer me right on that. So the first thing I did, so this past week here in the United States was Thanksgiving week, and it's a big deal. It's one of my favorite holidays because when I was growing up, it was just Christmas we kind of did separate. Like, Christmas was always a thing we did at home with mom and daddy, right? But and then we'd go visit people before and after Christmas, but Christmas Day was kind of a just our little singular family. It's just me, mom and dad, and Kimberly, and that was Christmas for us. But Christmas comes with all this added pressure, you know, the gifts and all that kind of stuff, and the, you know, old resentments and things like that. But Thanksgiving never had none of that for me growing up. Thanksgiving for me was either being at me, mom, papa's house with the whole Longmire clan, all my cousins, and everybody brought great food. Poor folks' food, but that's what I was raised on. It's what I love. Man, Barbara Longmire is one of the best cooks that ever walked the planet. She always brought some of the best food. My meemaw made the best chocolate pie. It was a time for the whole family to be together and us kids. And a lot of times my cousins, I didn't get to see them off, but every once in a while my cousins from Florida, Dominic and Gary Jean, Catherine would come in. Uncle Paul and Uncle Gary and Aunt Paula would come in from Florida and stay for the week at meemaw and papaw's. And we, us kids, would just run in the creeks and get muddy and get yelled at. And just have us a time. Cousins that didn't get to see each other a whole lot, just have us a time, right? And food was good, and the men were all excited about hunting, and all, you know, hunting was happening, and Thanksgiving to me always just be paper plates sitting out in the carport. And then after a while, we started doing Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara's house. And it was paper plates at Uncle Larry's and Aunt Barbara's house. And then might go out in the woods and shoot at something. Might go ride a four-wheeler. Might go set something on fire. We're going to do some. I remember one year, I don't remember how they came about this scheme, but they decided they was going to sell mistletoe on the side of the road. Uncle Larry and Aunt Barbara was needing a bunch of mistletoe for some sort of plan they were doing. I don't know if they were going to sell it or they were using it to help somebody else's business or something. They wanted a bunch of mistletoe. Mistletoe just grows rampant in East Texas, all up in the tree. You can just see it up in the trees. It's parasitic. And wasn't many climbers along my family. We're all built a certain kind of way, right? It's not climber style. We're not built like climbers. We got good foundations. Sturdy people. And they was trying to figure out how to get this mistletoe out of the tree, and Uncle Larry went and got his 410 and started shooting the mistletoe out of the tree with 410. And I remember that afternoon, we just sat out there and shot mistletoe out of the tree with a 410 shotgun. It's just fantastic memory, you know. Great Thanksgiving. Since Thanksgiving's my favorite holiday as an adult because, you know, my dad wasn't a big cook. My dad didn't like, I mean, he did like cooking, but he didn't do a lot of like grilling and outdoor cooking. That's all stuff I've kind of taught myself and learned on my own over the years. I got interested in it and started doing it. My Papa Clark was a real big barbecue man. I was kind of wanting to learn some of his tips and techniques and stuff like that. I was teaching myself stuff. And Thanksgiving's kind of become my thing. Every year I make the turkey. You know, every year I do the turkey. And I take a great deal of pride in my turkey. I've had some really excellent turkeys. I've had some fairly abysmal turkeys. But I take a great deal of pride, and I've tried a bunch of different methods over the years. And it's always been one of my favorite Thanksgivings was, man, it must be, God, I bet it's probably 10 years now. But I did a traditional style turkey. Grandma was coming to our Thanksgiving. Rachel's grandma was coming to our Thanksgiving with her cousin Duke at our little house in Willis. And we had mom-in-law there, and Rachel's brother was there. And it's one of these rare times where everybody was, you know, sort of. There was a period of time where her brother was kind of a part of our life, and I did a, because grandma was coming, I did a traditional turkey, you know, the rosemary, the thyme, and traditionally seasoned bird. And I smoked it on my Weber. I had a little 18-inch Weber charcoal grill, a little just, you know, a little kettle-style grill. And I smoked it with indirect heat on that grill, and the bird come out real good. And I was one of the highlights of my life as a person who enjoys cooking and smoking meat, was grandma telling me how good my turkey was. Grandma's eating the shit out of that turkey. And just, this is really good, JW. It's really good. I said, boy, that's about as good a compliment you're going to get right there. You know what I mean? Grandma likes my turkey. Grandma's been cooking for everybody else for ever. Grandma liked my turkey, you know. That's a Thanksgiving. That's kind of what it is here in the United States. And there's a story about the pilgrims, about how some pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock, met with the Native Americans, and decided to be friends and had a big feast together. Turkey wasn't involved yet. The turkey came later, which is kind of weird because I found out like in England, there's like three different birds called a turkey. Because apparently way back when, like 1600s or some shit like that, there was this bird in Africa, West Africa, and they started importing them into England through Morocco. And they called them turkeys because they were coming through the country of Turkey. And they called these birds turkey. And it's not a dissimilar bird, but noticeably different if you've seen a picture of the two. And turkey, the turkey as we know it today, or at least as we know it in the States, was already a native bird here to North America. They were everywhere. And they were all down in Mexico, and they're just real common here. And those started making their way over to England. And so basically what happened is some of the first explorers that came over to the United States, to North America, saw the bird that we call a turkey here now and decided that was the same bird. It was just lazy. Basically, oh, it kind of looks like that bird I've been seeing they've been bringing from Africa. Who's cut? That's a turkey. Clearly, that's a turkey bird. Yeah. Which tickles me. They just mislabeled a bird. They're like, it's clearly a turkey. I don't know what the Aztecs or the Mexicans called them back then, but. And then those birds got quite popular because they were delicious and they were a good-sized bird. And they started making their way over to Europe and became a big deal over there. The thing I found is funny about the... So when I was looking up Canadian Thanksgiving, it's basically, it's just a harvest festival. It's an end-of-harvest festival, like, whoo, good job, we got enough food. Let's hope we make it through another Canadian winter. Like, this might be the last time we eat. It's just kind of that. It's like a hoorah, we got the harvest done. Let's hope everything goes well into the next year. At least that's what I understood from my reading. And basically, those kind of festivals, those kind of Thanksgiving festivals have been in existence since well before it came to the United States. Like, there's always been some type of end-of-harvest Thanksgiving-type festival. It goes way back in Europe. So I don't know if any of the Brits or anything still, I didn't look that up, celebrate any kind of Thanksgiving or anything like that. But, the pilgrimage story is the kind of the weird one. So like there's these Puritans, religious Puritans, and they're feeling like they're being persecuted in England. Feel like people treating them bad. They said they're fleeing religious persecution. And so they left England, but they didn't come to the United States. They went to Holland. And they went to Holland, and they were in Holland, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. And then they decided Holland was religiously persecuting them too, and they came back to England. And England was like, we don't really... we liked it better when you was gone. So maybe you just find somewhere else to go. By then, there's stories of the New World, so they headed this way. So they come over here and tell us we can't go to the liquor store on Sunday or some bullshit. But they came to the United States, and then there's that big story about the Indians and everything, which is hilarious because there wouldn't have been no turkey on that table. Thanksgiving, of course, become a holiday much later. I believe Abraham Lincoln is who made it a holiday for us at the urgings of one particular lady who was a big proponent of it. And she was also the one that came up with the turkey. She's the one said that we should be teaching people how to cook turkey, and turkey should be Thanksgiving meal. And there was a lot of, it's almost all economy based. It had nothing to do with the first Thanksgiving or anything like that. One, turkeys was plentiful. It's easy to go out in the woods, snag you a turkey. Two, they were a good sized bird. So you just needed one to feed a whole family. That's a pretty good deal. The other reason they like turkey is because turkeys aren't labor animals. You know, you slaughter a cow or an ox or something like that, you're losing workforce back in. So you kill a turkey, you wouldn't stopping none of your hens from laying eggs, you wouldn't taking out a cow you needed, you know what I mean? Like you had an animal that was easily disposable because it wasn't doing no work on the farm. And that's kind of how turkeys became the thing. And that's how we ended up eating a bird every year that's so stupid it drowns in the rain. Just kidding. That's actually a myth. Turkey's actually really smart. I have known a great number of men that bow hunt turkeys in my life. And turkeys are incredibly, incredibly sharp. Very tricky to catch. Very tricky to nail down. And but that myth came because when they started farming turkeys, like raising turkeys together all the time for commercial sale and stuff like that, of course they fatten them up, you know. And these turkeys' proportions got out of hand and they got a little less athletic. A wild turkey and a farm-raised turkey are very different creatures. And it also messes with their vision and stuff, some of the stuff they give them. And so a lot of times these turkeys, there used to be this old myth that these turkeys would stand out in the rain, turn their head up, and drink rainwater till they drowned it. But they don't actually drown. But that's the best way I could describe American Thanksgiving to those of you who are outside the purview of the United States perspective. So every year, a lot of us get together, get us a turkey, get our family together and have us a little feast. I don't know where all the other foods come from. I have a few favorites. One of my personal favorites are deviled eggs. I like, my wife makes, there's dressing and stuffing. I'm not a stuffing guy. I only had that up north a couple times, not my cup of tea. But my wife makes a pretty good damn dressing. This year it was out of this world. She used my turkey drippings. And she makes, Rachel's an artist with gravy. It's literally one of my favorite parts of any holiday that involves gravy is to smoke a J on the porch with Rachel and then go in there and play her Stevie Nicks songs on the Bluetooth speaker while she makes magic. I made a joke about it. It's like watching Rembrandt paint the night watch, the way that woman makes gravy. And it's that little love potion number 9 she concocts is out of this world. Woman makes some gravy. I happen to love most Rachel's cooking. Except for the stuff she doesn't make, you know, I don't eat seafood, so I don't. It's not my thing. I have shellfish allergy, so I don't do a lot of scrimps. This week started out particularly hectic, though. Yeah, I do the last 2 years now, including this year. I've been a part of another friend of mine, a comedian, William Lee Martin. I've been a part of his Christmas tour every year. And it's a good, wholesome, comedy's a really dirty business. It's a really ugly business. A lot of people screwing you around. A lot of creepy people involved in entertainment too. So, and it's, you have to keep your guard up all the time because you never know what kind of creep you're going to be around this week. And not everybody, a lot of good people in entertainment too. But it's a dirty business. You got to stay guarded. And it's really nice to just wrap up the end of the year doing something wholesome that's kind of family-based. And I'm a Christmas guy and I love Christmas and I like celebrating Christmas. So, and though I'm not what you would call a religious man, I grew up in the church. And so I sort of like all that symbolism and I like the hymns and I like some of the more religious songs, Away in a Manger, Mary, Did You Know, that kind of stuff. It gives me a great deal of comfort because it's things I was raised on. I'm not a church going man. It's not my cup of tea, but I do enjoy that little bit of nostalgia every year. It just feels good in the year on something kind of wholesome or just entertaining people, bringing joy to them in the best way I know how, making them laugh. working with a friend, you know, a guy I've known over 20 years. But there's a lot of moving parts to the show because it's not just a stand-up show. It's not just me and him doing stand-up and then that's the end of it. For as much as I love speaking in public, I have a horrible, horrible phobia of singing in public. And I'm not a very good singer. Not saying I don't have a good voice. I think I have a nice voice. And, you know, when I've had help singing things, I've done some nice things. But I can't keep time in my head. I never know when to sing. I'm always... There's this content creator, this guy named Joey Bro, and they're always giving him shit because they said he's about a beat behind. And I'm like, I've been that way my whole life. I can't keep time in my head, and I'm always off beat. And so I struggle with that. But we sing. You know, we sing together on stage live. And I have to just rehearse, practice, because that's not my skill set. Along with that, we write a sketch every year. And you know, a 5-minute sketch takes hours and hours of writing to get right. Bill wrote 99-100% of the sketch this year. We just churned out ideas, got together and brainstormed. So we have a sketch. So there's always moving parts. There's costume changes. And then I also have to do, you know, 25 minutes of stand-up with kind of with a Christmas theme to it. And then I'm also reciting a poem this year. And then we do a sketch, and there's some costume changes. And then we do a grand finale that's a parody song. I Like My Christmas a Little on the Trashy Side, kind of like the old I Like My Women. I don't remember who sang it. I Like My Women a Little on the Trashy Side. Is that Confederate Railroad, maybe? Something like that. So every year before we start this show, I usually go up to Rome, Texas, which is about 4.5-5 hours from me. Rome, Texas is northwest of Fort Worth, just a little bit. It's a healthy drive. That's from my buddy, Cowboy Bill, William Lee Martin. I call him Cowboy Bill because that's how I always known him. That's where Cowboy Bill lives. And we go meet up at his office, and we rehearse. We rehearse the songs, and we work out the sketch, and we work out the beats of the show and kind of the show running time and kind of put it all together. And it's a lot of work. And usually the shows don't start until December. This year we had a show that the only time the theater could do it was right after Thanksgiving, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. I would never do a show Saturday after Thanksgiving again. Not because this was a bad show, just because it's too much. It's too much. When you're also trying to have Thanksgiving with your family and then rush off into something like that. But as a result, we had to rehearse different. Well, my week's been busy as shit. You know, y'all know I was just wrapping up all the book stuff. And I was already feeling a little burned out. There's a great sense of pride in finishing something, like finishing the book, even though I don't feel like it's finished. But there's also like a kind of emptiness that comes right after you do something like that, or at least for me. I don't know how it is for you. You might be different. You might just be like, ooh, I'm jazzed to get in the next thing. Me, I go through this cathartic kind of law. It's almost like losing something. It feels great. But it also feels like closing a door or something. I don't know how to, it feels something. There's a sense of loss after it's done. And I was struggling with that a little bit, especially because this particular book is, it's my life, or at least the early part of my life. And it's been painful to work through and cathartic to work through. And it's elevated my writing to a whole new level because the amount of writing I've had to constantly do to keep up with it and to keep up with the needs of keeping up with the schedule of what we were trying to do. And I've had a wonderful teacher and a wonderful friend in my editor, Adam, and I'm very thankful because But I was feeling kind of empty, but then I had to drive Monday morning need to go up. Need to drive up to Rome, rehearse, work out the show with William and Darren, our musician. And then I was going to just drive home that night. Just turn and burn, you know. Which that's 9 hours of driving in a day. It's a lot. Y'all know my hips been jacking with me, so it's kind of hard for me to be in the car that long. And I was already feeling something, and I had some ideas about the show, but I wasn't very good at articulating them. I'm glad William Lee Martin came up with a great idea for a sketch, because I showed up a little empty-handed this year. I had some ideas, but they just weren't good. And I was having trouble articulating them and making them any better than they were. And it's straight, you know, we have, my sister's been here staying with us, and Rachel's friend was visiting from out of town. And of course, Rachel's trying to get all the things ready for Thanksgiving. She's stressed out, and she had already got me a turkey, and I kind of prepped it and put it out here in the garage fridge. So it'd be ready for the big day. I could just throw it in the electric smoker and go. I was going easy this year, just going to do a dry brine. Just going to do a dry brine this year. Not a bunch. Ain't messing with wet brine. Ain't doing all that kind of bullshit. Ain't injecting nothing. I'm not going to take the turkey out dancing before I cook it. Just pack it down with some seasoning. Dry it out a little bit. Throw it in the smoker. Done it before. Works good. Makes a good turkey. I was just trying to take it easy this year, because I knew I had travel, and I had the show right after Thanksgiving. I headed up there Monday, all the way up to Rome, just storming and pouring on me. 287 just had standing water on it everywhere. That little Mazda is the hydroplaning son of a bitch you ever drove in your life. It just ain't got no weight to it. That car hits water and it just wants to go water skiing. And there was standing water all over 287. Of course, I ain't slowing down because I'm rushing through everything, always. I'm still trying to run 75 miles an hour and pouring rain and hitting these water puddles and getting sketchy. And literally going up onto an overpass on 287, there's standing water. Like, how's there standing water on a hill, on an inclined surface? Like, somebody explain to me the math behind that. Like, how bad are y'all at building freeways? We got standing water on the incline. Hit standing water going up on a bridge. That Mazda got squirrelier and shit. Scared the piss out of me. Got our bills. We did all the thing. Of course, 6 or 7 o'clock at night before we get done. I got to turn around and head back to Houston. I just can't see as good at night as I used to be able to. And get just south of Mansfield, which still puts me about 3 hours away from the house, and it's just pea soup. I mean, the thickest fog. It must have been some weird weather condition. I couldn't see two car lengths in front of the car. I mean, literally, I'm not exaggerating at all. And of course, I should have slowed down, but I didn't. I'm in a hurry to get home. I'm still trying to run 70, 75 miles an hour. And there's part of that 287 thing where it gets real windy before you get on 45. And even parts of 45 before you get down to Huntsville and Houston that aren't well lit and real windy. And literally going down that highway and looking to the right, I guess I'm hallucinating stuff. Sorry about that. I thought I saw the animal crawl out under my lawnmower just now. Still think maybe I did. I couldn't tell what it was. It happened so quick. Something snuck off in here trying to get away from the rain. But I couldn't see. And I couldn't see anything off the road. I could see the lines on the road. I could see my headlights in the fog. I could see other cars when they got close. And there's this dude in a Toyota, a little Toyota car. I couldn't tell you what, I couldn't tell you what model it is. They all look the same anymore. And he kept pulling up beside me, and I was in the right lane. He kept pulling up beside me in the left lane, trying to match speed with me. But then he'd get scared, I guess, because he couldn't see, and he'd back way off and be on his brakes a bunch. But what he kept doing is he kept pulling up and getting in front of me, and then he would get spooked and start all over his brakes, and I have to jump lanes and go around the dude. Like, bro, if you're scared of it, just back off, you know, or get behind me. So I had a couple close calls with him where he was acting kind of sketchy. I don't know. He might have been drinking. And then there was this guy in a big old Dodge Ram, and this guy in Dodge Ram was doing the same thing. He would run up right on my ass, brightest xenon, whatever the shit headlights they got now, just light me up. And then he'd whip around me, and he'd brrr, and then we'd get to another dark spot on the freeway where it's curvy, and brrr, he's dancing on his brakes again, all that kind of shit. I could tell he was unsure about his abilities. I probably should have been too, but I wanted to get home. I just kept that little Mazda pegged on 80 mile an hour, just as long as I could see the line on the side of the road. And I assumed there were some trees and stuff on the side of the road. I couldn't tell you, I couldn't see them. You know, right outside of Huntsville, and they've both backed off a little bit, but I can see their headlights behind me just faintly in the fog behind me. And I come up over a little hill. When I come up over that little hill, I see this, it looks like a purple light and it's blinking, but I can't tell if it's on the road or where the hell it is. It's just up here in the fog. I can see this kind of purpley blinky light. And when I tell you I'm on it before I realize what it is, but when I get up on it and have to slam on my brakes, it's two 18-wheelers have gotten cross-eyed with each other and gotten sideways in the middle of the freeway, blocking both lanes of traffic. There's an 18-wheeler wrecker, one of the like a heavy service wrecker, and it's trying to straighten one of them out and pull it out, and it's his flat. That's why I'm seeing it. He's got these weird strobe purpley lights going on that don't look like your normal emergency lights. And there's two state troopers there with their lights on. I couldn't even see their lights. I couldn't even see their lights until I was right up on them. And the only place to go is the shoulder, and there's a state trooper standing there, and he's got a flashlight, and he's telling me to hold off. He's giving me the hand, telling me to hold up a minute. And I'm looking up at the top of that hill, because if I see them Dodge Ram headlights come over the top of that hill, that cop's getting run over, buddy. I mean, not hard. I'm just going to bump him out of the way with the Mazda and shag ass, and he can deal with that Dodge Ram that ain't going to see his ass until whenever, you know? And if, finally, I rolled my window down. I said, there's a guy coming behind me in a Dodge truck that I guarantee he's not going to see us, and I'd really appreciate if you let me get around. And he waved me over the shoulder, let me drive around the shoulder and get around him. And then he started shining his flashlight at the road. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good call, bro. I told him, I said, I couldn't even see your lights. I was up on y'all before I saw any of your lights. And so he had went and turned the headlights on, was flashing his little light when I was driving off. So hopefully got that Dodge Ram's attention. I didn't read no story about nobody getting run over. But I was steady, boy. I see them headlights coming right here. I'm just going to nudge you out of the way with this Mazda and go on home. Hope I don't end up in jail. Yeah. Get home. Midnight. Have a couple of drinks on the porch of Mama. Get up. Next morning's Tuesday, right? Make some last minute run to the store, get a few things we needed here and there, that kind of stuff. Thursday's going to be Thanksgiving. Well, Tuesday, we got this Bosch oven, and it's 20 years old. Everybody, that's what you get for buying something new. It's 20 years old. I ain't mad at it. It lasted 20 years. That's pretty good for an oven anymore. But it threw a code, and the code is basically, it has a motorized latch inside it that locks it during self-cleaning. And the reason this latch exists, all these people are like, oh, I wish things were like the way they were back in the old times. Well, Somebody didn't, because what happened is in the 90s, a whole bunch of people kept opening their ovens while it was on self-cleaning mode and setting their house on fire and setting themselves on fire. And then the first thing they'd do is go lawyer up and sue the manufacturer of the oven. So now all the ovens made now got this motorized locking self-latching switch. And if that thing's screwing up, it won't let anything on the stove work. It's a safety device. You know, maybe if all them people in the old days hadn't been suing manufacturers every time they did something stupid, we wouldn't have to have all this shit. But we do, and it's a result of litigious behavior. Everybody wants to go sue. Everybody wants to go get them a check. So I'm with you. Y'all know I'm a bit of an anachronist. I like old cars. I like a lot of old stuff. But I'm no Luddite. I like a little technology, too. And I understand the reasons behind technology. And I also understand how many fewer people die as a result of bad engineering these days. It's a lot less. Not everything new is bad. Can be a pain in the ass, though. Especially 2 days before Thanksgiving when your oven won't work. Because I was going to do my stuff in the smoker. But, you know, she had pies to bake and dressing and, you know, all number of things that she had to cook in the oven. And now the oven's dead. And I tore the oven all apart. And, you know, this is the thing I will bitch about Bosch. Apparently Bosch went around. So, you know, you can find DIY videos on how to do just about anything on YouTube and stuff like that. You can't find a lot of videos on Bosch on this oven latch. And it's because Bosch was running around suing creators or threatening legal action for creators, showing off proprietary trade information. Y'all should look in that. Milwaukee does that too. Milwaukee and DeWalt has started doing that and started going after creators and stuff or showing ways to fix their batteries and stuff. It's kind of crazy. It's chicken shit is what it is. I'm not crazy. It's chicken shit. Greed. Greed, all bow at the altar. Altar of money. And we all do. Much we hate to admit it. Money means a lot of things to different people. Some of us, it just means freedom. Because you ain't born free. You got to earn it. And so I couldn't find no videos how to take that Bosch oven apart. Most ovens and like washing machines and shit like that, you take apart, even dryers, right? They always got those little spring clips under the front, under the top. And you stick a putty knife in there and you jiggle that clip and you jiggle that clip. And then the whole top hinges up. Not that some bitch in Bosch. I'm telling you, I've pulled engines out of cars and removed less things than I had to remove to get that Bosch oven apart. I had to take all the knobs apart, take the control panel off, get to some crazy little screws that went up under the range top, all manner of shit to get that range top hinged up and open, all the burners apart, all that crap, and the gas lines loose to get that thing open where I could get to that motorized latch and see if I could clean it up. Or I even tried jumpering it, and that didn't work. That just the whole control board said no. Apparently, they knew somebody was going to try that. Then I wanted to go look for a part. Discontinued. But I ain't even. It's a 20-year-old oven. It's a 20-year-old. I ain't mad about it. You know what I mean? I get y'all don't want to keep making parts for a 20-year-old oven. That their new ovens aren't anything like it. I get it. I ain't mad about it. Disappointed because I was hoping I could just go find me a part, but it's okay. I did find me a tested used part on eBay, and you know, $75. 20-year-old oven, I gotta spend $75 on it, and maybe we get another 5 years out of it, and I don't have to buy a new oven while we're living in this house. That's good. I'm good, bro. I'm not mad about it. A little pissy about the timing. Not mad about it in general. I hear so many stories of people's ovens and stoves breaking on Thanksgiving. I was thinking about writing a little sketch where it's just the guys designing the expired timer. You know what I mean? For appliances in their little boardroom somewhere. And they're just like, well, we want it to go out. Well, obviously sometime in November, you know, like 22nd. Yeah, like 22nd, 23rd, somewhere in there. Got to make sure that's when it takes a shit. Do we got an alternate date? Yes, December 25th. Yeah, if we could make them go out on December 25th, that'd be great too. But I found my used parts going to be here this week. Not in time to save Thanksgiving, but me and Rach, we do well under pressure. And I've gotten so much, I talked about this in my little video I made. I didn't crash out. I got a little irritated. I was like, you piece of shit. All right. You know. But we didn't crash out. We looked like, well, should we just replace it? Should we do this? Should we do that? Well, none of those felt like good options. That's a lot of money just to replace a major appliance like that, especially anymore. Even if you get, like, I usually go to Scratch and Dent, and I get some pretty good deals. I'm a pretty good wheeler and dealer. But this is a lot of money put out right before the holidays, you know. It's been an exceptionally profitable year, so I've lost some money on some shows this year. So decided against that, but then we remembered, oh, yeah. You know, a company that sent me that electric smoker last year, they sent me a new one this year, and I'm going to use this one. I'll give the old one to my cousin Ricky, but it's still sitting over in the garage. I said, hell, man, we can do your dressing in that electric smoker. It's just an oven, basically, a low temperature oven. And then, Rachel, we have a combination air fryer, microwave, convection, little toaster oven type thing. It's not very big, little Toshiba. And Rachel figured out how to do her pies in there. And then she figured out how to do her cornbread in the crock pot. And it's some of the best cornbread I ever had in my life. It was damn good. I had cornbread and chili. I had a little cornbread, just Hormel chili, just canned chili. Little cornbread and chili the other night. That was tremendous. Had never tried that before, but I heard people like put it on the cornbread, and so I had to give it a shot. It was damn good. That's Diamond Jim certified, cornbread and chili. I also want to try it on cinnamon roll. There's people somewhere put their chili on cinnamon roll, and I'm going to be honest, I kind of want to try that shit. I've had the chili on noodles, like they do up in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, that kind of shit. I've had that. It's pretty good. I ain't got no issue with it. I could go for a little less cinnamon in it. I think they put some cinnamon or some nutmeg or something in it. But that type of chili with hamburger meat is more akin to a bolognese sauce anyway. So it doesn't even bother. It's like, I like it. It's pretty good. I like noodles. I like chili. I like bolognese sauce. So she figures out how to do cornbread in the crock pot. We were about to whip out the Dutch oven, but we already had other things that were having to be cooked on the stove, you know, green beans, shit like that on the stovetop. And luckily the gas range was working, just the oven wouldn't work. But the gas range would work. So we figure out how to get around it. I'm still going to smoke turkey and the smoker. I come out here the day before Thanksgiving, we get that problem straightened out, and I'm worried because Rachel's all stressed, and I'm just trying to figure out ways to help her. And we got other people in the house, and people we love, but it's more stress. We have a small home, and so, you know, it's a lot of people in our house. It's a small home. So, day before Thanksgiving, come to get my turkey out of the refrigerator. And the trusty old garage refrigerator has taken a shit. And didn't let nobody know. Now, I've heard since I told my story, people said there's this little $20 alarm you can get off Amazon. If ever get me another garage refrigerator, I'll do that. I don't use garage refrigerator that much. I'm not a beer drinker, so I don't keep beer in there. I just pretty much use the freezer part of it, store meat in it. And the only reason we even got it is we had bought a used refrigerator from a friend of ours right before we moved in here. And we brought that one because it's a big, nice LG refrigerator. And that was grandma's old refrigerator. And I just moved out here to the garage. They had old deep freezer out here. It wasn't working. And I just put it in place of that deep freezer. And we just pretty much just used the freezer on it for overage, you know, extra. chicken nuggets for the kids and that kind of shit. And I ain't mad at it either. That refrigerator is over 20 years old. Been out here in this hot-ass garage getting cooked by Houston heat, temperatures that are unbearable. It gets 110 degrees in here sometime in the summer. And just kept chugging along. That refrigerator is kind of famous. So about a year before last, was it last year or year before last, we had Hurricane Beryl come through here, knocked out our power for like 15 days. We forgot about that refrigerator. And that refrigerator had a turkey in it. It was a, you know, one of those free turkeys sometimes you get around the holidays. And it had an extra turkey in it, and I was just going to experiment with it, cook something, you know, do some kind of way with it. Well, we forgot about it until come about holiday season last year. And she bought a ham and a turkey, and I went to go put it in that refrigerator, realized that refrigerator had been sitting with that ronk-ass turkey in it, and I cleaned that thing out and got most of the smell out, and it was a, and I put it on the internet, and it went viral, and it was just all these people telling me all their horrible stories about things that happened with their garage refrigerators and deep freezers, and that's why I ain't mad at it. That post, that one little post on Facebook, it went so viral, it made me about $1,800. I could have bought four of them refrigerators for that. It's just an old, you know, basic Whirlpool refrigerator, 20-year-old refrigerator. I could have went down to scratch a dip, bought me a whole mess of them, but I cleaned it out, got it working again. Anyways, it takes a dive day before Thanksgiving this year. And we knew it had happened recent, because when I went grab a bird, like it was just, when I opened the door, I'm smelling it right now and it's about to gag me. But when I opened that door, it'd knock a buzzard off a shit wagon, right? It was, whoo, it was bad. And I checked the temperature on that turkey and it was a balmy 55 degrees and just a bacteria cesspool in the bottom of the refrigerator. And opened the freezer up and the freezer's sitting at 46 degrees and we're, luckily, everything up there was still frozen, so we were able to save all that stuff. But there, now I'm without a turkey day before Thanksgiving. Still didn't crash out. Cussed a little bit. Did punch the refrigerator. Slammed the door on it a couple times. Cussed it. Then decided to go to our grocery store. It's called HEB. Decided to go over to HEB, see if I could find me a fresh turkey. But I didn't want to play fresh turkey. But luckily they had a sale. It actually turned out pretty great. I was in such a stressed out mode. I was in high alert because the shit with the oven and the trip to Rome and back. It was just it's just one of them weeks where I was just burnt. I was just fried. And I came into the week fried. Came into the week cooked a little bit. I really clash out. But I told Rachel, I said, I gotta reset my day somehow before I go to HEB. Now, I've been trying to get a hold of my weed guy for a couple of days. He hadn't been answering the phone. I was down to the dry stuff that ain't no good. And a little anxiety about that. It was like, man, I really just want to kind of smoke, take the edge off. So I went in the bathroom and I got these beard products I use, you know. I'm wearing this shirt right now. Outlaws and Gents beard product. I love this stuff. First beard product I ever found I wanted to keep using that actually feel like it's doing something. I've been using them for months now and my beard looks better than it ever has. And it feels better and it's growing better. And so I went in there, I put my beard oil on. Sometimes you just need a little self-care, right? A little something to zhuzh you up. And I put my beard oil in and put some of that balm, that good smelling balm in. So the oil I use is like a pine cedar oil. And then the balm I use is tobacco vanilla. And it's just got a nice, it's a nice scent layer that I like. And it goes really good with my cologne that I have. I use this Armani cologne I like a lot that Rachel picked out for me. She picks out my cologne because if she don't like it, what the hell's the use of it? And comb my hair, brush my beard out real good, put some of my smell good on, You know, just make yourself feel a little better. Sometimes you smell better, you look better, you feel better. You know, it's one of those kinds, like a PMA, positive mental attitude type thing. Look better, feel better. Sometimes when I work for home, you know, writing and stuff, a lot of times I like go in the bathroom and fix myself all up and put myself together like I'm going to a job, because it helps me get focused and get right to work when I sit down. It's hard to be focused in your pajamas or a pair of shorts sometimes. So I did that. Rachel, pray for me. I'm going to the most popular grocery store in Houston the day before Thanksgiving. I may not make it. We had went the day before, and I hollered at a lady in the parking lot because she kept honking her horn at me. And I whirled around to tell her to go F herself and then realized it was a lady and dialed it back in. I thought it was a dude. I was about to just blow some steam off of this jackass. And then I realized it was a lady. I felt like an asshole. Turned my ass back around. So pray for me. I'm trying to make it HEB and back without crashing out and losing my shit. So I did all that stuff, make myself feel better. I got in the car, put some good tunes on, backed out of the driveway, and start heading to the HEB. Weed man hits me up. Sorry, man. Been out of town for a couple of days, but I got you. I said, oh, sweet Jesus. Well, I went over there. I got to pet his horse. That's not a euphemism. My weed dealer has a horse that he traded a Pontiac GTO for, that he traded a bag of weed for. And so I got to see his horse in the driveway here in the city. Got my little bag of feel better. Went to the grocery store. Go to pull in the grocery store. So our grocery store has a parking garage because it's kind of in the city and it's compact. And so to get up on the second floor, a parking garage is just one ramp, and I drive a standard. So I like to wait till the ramp's clear so I'm not sitting on this vertical ramp, you know, burning my clutch up to get to the top of the ramp. So I'm waiting for the person at the top to get to the top of the ramp. And sure enough, this broad pulls up behind me in a Mazda CX-5. And it's just middle-aged white lady. And she honks her horn. And I wave at her like, hey, they're almost clear and I'm going to pull up. And then she honks her horn again. And I kind of wave at her again, trying to be cool because I'm just trying to keep myself in check. And I feel better. I got my weed. And she honks again. It's all right. Ramp clears. I pull up top of the ramp. Was you come up out of the top of the ramp, there's like a concrete wall and you can't see over it, especially in something small like the Mazda. So when I pull around that wall, there's this old man that's coming out of the, so the store is on the second floor. The store is actually on the second floor. The whole bottom is parking. So old man coming out of the store, and I don't know, he looks like he's in his 70s, old Latino guy. And he dropped his bag and a couple cans and shit rolled out from under his bag. And it was a situation where I need to get out and help him. He had it under control. But he just needed a moment. The dude just needed a moment, you know? He just needed a minute to collect his things. And I could have drove around him and then everybody else would have followed me and it would have been hectic for him. So I didn't. I waited. Here comes this broad on the horn again. Well, now I'm kind of laughing because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give this old man his space and she can kiss every bit of my left foot, right? I don't care. He just kissed the whole inside of my left foot, heifer. You're going to sit back here. I'm in control. He collects his things, starts making his way across the little driveway there. I pull around him now that it's clear. And there ain't no parking up there. There's 131 spots up there and they all full. And I got this heifer behind me. She's still clear. She's waving her arms now. Very impatient. A couple cars behind her. Going around the parking lot. And I decided not to cut up and down the aisles. Because I like to kind of just go in a lap and figure it out. You know what I mean? Not rush people. And people, those aisles are kind of narrow. And when people are trying to go both ways, it's just a pain. You know, there's a sense of order to things sometimes that make things work better. So, and it's clearly designed to be a lap style situation. So I just make the full lap and she cuts off down a rose in a hurry. Just, that little Mazda. Boy, she's hot. Her little CX-5. A couple of them follow her and I come back around to where that ramp is. And that old man, he's in this little Mazda B2200 that his truck was held together with hopes and baling wire. I mean, fenders hanging off and little pickups just in rough shape. The old Mazdas, they just run. And he's backing out of the parking spot in that Mazda. He sees me, waves at me. I wave back and he pulls out and I pull into the spot. Right about time, Heifer in the blue CX-5 comes whipping around trying to get it. Now she's doubly mad. And I was one of the coolest moves. I was so mad at this lady. I just wanted to be ugly, but I wasn't trying to have that energy on me. It's still one of the coolest moves. I got out of the Mazda and I just waved at her like real nice, like, hey, it's you again. And she flipped me off and sped off down the aisle. And I walked into HEB prepared for a battle. Knew it was packed. And I knew exactly where Rachel had sent me the listing for what I was looking for and what aisle it was on. It was in the meat department on the right-hand side. I knew where to go. And go in there, and there's a bunch of people arguing in the produce area, like two families arguing with each other about produce and bustling and hustling and all that kind of shit. Not shoving, but voices are raised. And I just ease around that. And because people are stopping to gawk at that, I'm able to ease around this whole crowd of people. I'm talking minutes. And go right to my turkey. I find the turkey I want. Grab it. Ease back out. Because now more people are coming to gawk at this, I ease over to one of the self-checkouts and check out just like that. Boom. I am walking out to the Mazda and I still see CX-5 ladies driving around the parking lot looking for a spot. I get a Mazda, my prize, my turkey. I left the house, got home within an hour, which is crazy talk. Didn't know I was going to have to thaw my but turkey sat on the front of it, fresh, never frozen. Horse shit. That thing had a block of ice in it that could have sunk the Titanic. Are you shitting me? That thing been frozen at some point in time. I had to thaw that turkey, kind of quick thaw it. And pat it all down, dry brine it, put it in the refrigerator. We had to clean out the entire refrigerator to make room for the turkey because now the other fridge don't work. Had to deal with a particularly old avocado that somebody that was in a bowl in the back of the refrigerator that almost cost me my guts. I don't get pukey at gross smells and stuff. I worked on plumbing for years. That stuff don't bother me. But I was walking out the back door and that avocado fell out of that bowl and smashed on the concrete. It looked like baby shit and it just I didn't lose my lunch, but boy, it was sure threatening to me. It was sure threatening me. I said, boy, got the turkey prepped. Big day comes. Mama's able to get her stuff done. We do the dressing in the smoker. I do the turkey in the smoker. I cheated a little bit from my crispy skin. So I sprayed just a little oil on the outside of the turkey after I got it up to about temperature. I got it up about 160 on the smoker, that good pecan smoke. And I used this meat church seasonings called Gospel. And it was tremendous. That man does good work. And But what I did is my big offset smoker I got around the side of the garage here, I had some pecan from the old pecan tree that fell a year or so ago. I've been seasoning some wood off of it, and I had some good chunks of pecan, so set up a little charcoal bed in there, got that pecan up to a roaring. I was pushing about 400 degrees in that offset smoker with good pecan smoke. And then when I got that turkey up temperature, I moved it over to my big offset, stuck it in there, and clamped it in there with the breast pointed away from the firebox and crisped that skin up real good. Some of it was still a little rubbery in a few places, but most of it crisped up real good. Turkey skin's a pain. turkey come out good. Mama's cooking come out amazing, as always does. We had a nice Thanksgiving. And Friday, we don't often have a babysitter, you know, but my sister is here, so she stayed with the kids. And me and Ray just went, we went to Petco and bought some cool shit for the cat, some toys for the cat. And we just don't get to do stuff like that together very often. And then we went over to where Rachel gets her nails done, and we both got a manicure and a pedicure, and my fingernails look amazing, and they feel really good too. And it's a nice little self-care. That pedicure, that's only the second one I ever had in my life. Boy, it sure make your feet feel good. They rub all this lotion on them, and they salt scrub, and then they put hot wax on them, and then clip your toenails real nice and get rid of all your cuticles, and take what looks like a wood shaper tool to your foot, scratch off all them. I swear my feet fit in my shoes better afterwards. I was just light footed going across that parking lot. Felt nice. Of course, got up Saturday morning. And I had to be in Rome by 3 because we need to rehearse as soon as they open the theater. No, not Rome, Fredericksburg, Texas, about 4 hours. So got up early Saturday, shagged ass to Fredericksburg. Got there early. We worked on the script. We read through the script a couple times, sketches. Bill had rewritten the sketch. And then we did, then we rehearsed till just about showtime. It was 8 o'clock. And then the show went good. It wasn't many people there as I hope. We had like 135 people. It was a small theater. But the beats worked. The sketch worked. The beats worked. The music worked. I did flub up on the last song of the night. I read the wrong lyrics because I got a little lyric cheat sheet down there because I can't remember the lyrics. It's a parody song that we do. And I accidentally read the wrong lyrics on my part to do a solo. And so my lyrics didn't make no sense. But I sang it loud and proud. We just laughed and went on. But the stand-up went good. The show went good. All the beats hit. It was funny. It was a good night. We had a good time doing a little meet and greet with some folks after the show. Then found out you can't get no food in Fredericksburg after 11 o'clock. So Bill and his wife run over to the Whataburger and grabbed everybody some taquitos. And then we went back to Bill's hotel room, Bill and his wife and Darren and his wife, and just hung out there and ate our taquitos and talked about the show and talked about what we want to trim in the sketch, all that good shit. Had a few drinks. I got in bed about 1:20 in the a.m., and then got up at 5 a.m. this morning to get on the road, headed back here. And, it's been a week. That is a very Jerry Wayne Thanksgiving right there. I am a little cooked. I'm glad next week I'm off. I don't have shows next week. We do got some family stuff we got to go do, but I don't have shows next week. But then that last week is 4 shows in 3 days, and that's going to be crunch time. So we'll get through it. We always do. I'm looking forward to Christmas. Doing the Christmas show last night, went ahead, got my Christmas spirit tingling, and I'm about ready to start cooking on Christmas. Hey, boy, we'll wrap that up right there. Let's do some testimonials, if you will. Some testimonials. I know I pulled these up. Here we go. And, it's our old buddy, Jake of All Trades, Master of Fun. I wish you'd come out with some Wrecking Yard hats and shirts. Even simple hats with just the Wrecking Yard on them or any of the vehicles you've used as the thumbnail. Man, we're going to do that, Jake. It's just been such a grind lately. But as soon as I got to sit down and design some shit like that with Rachel. But we got some ideas we're toying with. We just hadn't put them into execution yet. Merchandise is kind of a pain. You know, you can pay somebody else to do it, or you can get it made and shipped to you, but then you put a bunch of money out on that, and then you know you got to sell it all to get your money back, And it's a lot of shipping, a lot of work. We just did the stickers, and that was a huge run. But we're going to do something. We're just trying to figure out the best way to do it. So sorry, I'm slacking a little bit on that, brother. At Jack Franklin, at the end of cooking, hit that skin with oil. It will crispen it up. Now, that's exactly what I did, brother. That's exactly what I did. I'm an old hand at turkeys, Bubba. At James Nauman. Man, you just told a story about my life. I can relate to Steve in so many ways. I don't know how I stayed out of prison or jail, but I burned so many bridges during my addiction struggles. It took me way too long to grow up. I screwed up one marriage and almost messed up my current marriage with my poor decisions. But I thank God every day for the second chance of life that I was given. If it wasn't for my current wife and my kids, I would probably be dead or in jail today. Brother, I know that feeling. I truly believe that about Rachel. Had I not met Rachel, I would have just been another stand-up comic that got found in a hotel room. OD'd on something. Because the direction I was going before I met her was not a good one. And she gave me, not a reason, but inspired me to change my path. And I'm real glad that you found a reason to change yours, and you're still here with us. I ain't spent a lot of time in jail, but the few times I've been to jail, it wasn't fun. Didn't enjoy it. 0 out of 5 stars. Being locked in a cage is bullshit. I understand why they do it, but not my cup of tea. You know, sometimes I have a week where the universe don't whisper. It shouts me down. Where all the molecules around me are just reading me the riot act. You know, I told you, it started with a drive through a wall of fog so thick I couldn't see a car length in front of me. Kind of fog don't make no sense. Kind of erases the world, dares you to keep moving anyway. All I could do was slow down, lean forward, guess at the shape of the road, and trust that the ground underneath me was still there. And maybe that should have been a warning, but I didn't take that as a warning. I just took it as a Monday. Because the time I made it home felt like the whole house had joined in on the week's rebellion. You ever walk into your own place and realize even the appliances have had enough of you? Like the walls themselves took a vote and decided they weren't taking on one more ounce of responsibility. Everything that could flicker, falter, or fail chose that moment to do it. We also ended up with some plumbing problems. I mean, with the dramatic timing of a soap opera star collapsing on cue right as the holiday music starts to play. And then because the calendar don't care about your personal bull, I had to load up and hit the road again. Another long turn and burn run. First night doing a new Christmas show, new jokes, new beats, new rhythm. And every mile between here and there echoed with that little voice that, you know, most creatives and artists carry inside them. What if you rush this? What if it ain't ready? What if you ain't ready? And to top it off, the book is done. And finishing a book, a real one, one that's you lived in, it didn't feel like crossing the finish line. It felt like walking out of the house I grew up in and closing the door behind me. The silence afterward is loud, and hollow, heavier than I expected. I think I've been running on empty. And worse than that, I think I've been driving past every metaphorical fuel station in sight, telling myself, nah, I'll fill up at the next one. I ain't got time. Well, that's the trick, ain't it? You convince yourself you're out of gas, you're out of time, that you got to push forward on fumes because stopping feels like failure, because rest feels like weakness, because slowing down means you got to sit in the quiet and listen to the parts of yourself you manage to outrun for months. I was reminded of a truth this week, somewhere between the fog and the house throwing its little mutiny. A man can run on empty for a surprisingly long time, but he can't steer, he can't see straight, and he sure as hell can't be grateful. And Thanksgiving, for all its chaos and comfort, for all the burnt pies and loud houses and sleepy afternoons, is supposed to be about gratitude. Not for the big stuff, not for the highlight reel, but for the tiny things that we hurry past. A warm kitchen, a safe drive home, a partner who laughs in the middle of disaster, kids who still believe you can fix any damn thing. A life where you get to tell stories for a living, a breath, another breath. Gratitude is the fuel, always has been. And I think this week, life was trying to wave me into the station. Pull over, boy. Top off. You can't outrun yourself forever. So if you're listening to this and you're tired, not need a nap tired, but I've been holding up the roof for a little too long tired, I hope you take this as a sign that I didn't listen to the first time. Slow down. Refill. Let somebody else stir the damn gravy. Let the world wobble without you for a day. It'll manage. It's going to keep turning. It always does. And if you've been pushing so hard you forgot what you're grateful for, go just find one thing. Just one. Everything doesn't have to be right, but find one thing and hold it like a lifeline. Fill up off of it. Because the truth is, we ain't running out of time. We're just overdue for a breath. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, the fog ain't going to lift until you quit trying to outrun it. I'm rooting for you. I'm JW and I love you. Ooh, I am need a nap tired. I am need a nap tired. I'm going to go edit this thing, get it in the can for y'all. I'll see y'all this afternoon. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime.